Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
So, Woody, the title of the play, Bullet for Adolf, what does that refer to?
Yeah, the title comes out of the fact that even though the play takes place in the summer of 1983 in Houston, Texas, a very hot summer, as I recall, there is a gun in it that was meant to kill Hitler once upon a time, which is actually based on a real story, but has nothing really to do with that other than the fact that the gun itself plays kind of a pivotal part in the plot.
Right. It's actually based on there's eight characters in the play. Is that right?
Yeah, there's eight characters. My buddy and I, Frankie Hyman, we actually met working construction down there in Houston and in that summer of 83. And so all these characters are real people that we that had a big impact on us. So we wanted to incorporate that into a play. And, it's not really, you could say it's semi-autobiographical in the sense that the characters are real, but I think that faction fiction, I don't know, it's probably about 99% embroidery now and 1% what happened.
So you started with the characters, but the story's taken on a life of its own, has it?
Yeah.
That's great. What kind of issues does the play explore? And is it a comedy or a drama?
Well, it's a comedy, we certainly hope. Well, let's put it this way. If people aren't laughing in the theater, then it's going to turn into a drama. And that's not what I'm hoping for. But, it deals with a lot of, issues like race and gender, sexuality, there's a number of topics that they take on, but, hopefully are dealt with in kind of a humorous way, although I must say it has a bit of an edge.
Excellent. Now, you're not going to perform in this. You're going to direct it, and you're co-writing it.
Yeah.
And you're also going to hold auditions. Now, why not just cast known actors? Why do you want to hold auditions and look for new actors?
Well, because I don't know, with my experience, I got a call from this guy years ago, Marcelo Cabezas, and he asked me to come out and direct this show, This Is Our Youth, which I came out and did one summer a few years back, and then ended up coming back the following summer and doing it again, and I really came to appreciate Toronto quite a bit. I've also done a few movies there, and now two productions of that play, and I just came to appreciate Toronto and the people, and also thought they were terrific audiences, maybe because they like This Is Our Youth, but I really had a connection with Toronto, and since for quite a while now, I've been telling people it's my favorite city in North America, and I love it there. I really enjoy it. So I wanted to try to get back together with, Marcelo Cabezas and, the other guys who I worked with before, Derek Chua and Corey Ross, and have those guys kind of all be a part of this experience, just feeling like, do it fresh here. But a lot of the actors are quite young. They're in their early 20s, so I thought it might be cool to try to cast it out of the various colleges there in Toronto. And I don't know. We'll see if that works out. Hopefully we'll be able to find the actors we need.
Sounds great. I remember in This Is Our Youth, you had quite young actors as well, and the play was very edgy, and it worked out really well.
Yeah, I guess it was the fineness of that experience that's bringing me back. And I got to say, it was kind of interesting how we came upon the Hart House, because I was with Michael Hollett, and we've been buddies for a while, but I'd never gone over to see the Now offices, and I got in a car with him, and we were driving over, and as we're driving, he said he needed to take a pee. So I'm like, okay. Now, for me, if I need to take a pee, from the moment that I have the idea until I'm back in the car is usually no more than 3 minutes. But with him, you know, he goes up, he takes a right, he goes across a bridge, he takes a left. It takes him forever just to find a place for him because he's a little more dignified than me, I guess. He didn't want to do it outside. He wanted to go inside. So we pull up, and it turns out we're pulling up right at University of Toronto. And I see these, you know how beautiful those buildings are right where the Hart House is.
Yeah.
All that ivy-covered walls and just that old-style architecture. It was gorgeous. And I see they're advertising a play, Richard III. I was like, geez, I'd love to see this this theater. And so I met Doug there from Hart House, and the next thing you know, we're in the theater, and I think this is the perfect space. Couldn't be better. So from that, from that time, which was now, I don't know, that was 7 months ago, we've made a lot of progress. And anyway, I like to think this is going to be a terrific production.
Yeah, well, good choice of venue. It's a great theater, beautiful space, as you say.
Well, thank God Michael needed to take a pee at that moment.
funny how things happen.
No, it's ironic because I was looking at all these other theaters at the same, during the time that I was there, and I never felt it was quite right until I came there. So
fantastic. Now you've written a couple of plays, right? Is that something that's always interested you?
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt myself something of an unpenned writer, someone who's really going to get down to it eventually, but I guess maybe one of the marks of a good writer is they're hungry. You know, me, I'm not hungry. I'm just living off the fat of the land. I got it too easy, but, finally, I don't know, just finally got it together and wrote this play with my buddy Frankie, and so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and what about the directing? Is that something that really interests you as well?
Yeah, I've always wanted to direct. I mean, I have, as you know, directed before, but I like the feeling of it. You know, I'm a very indecisive person, but when I'm directing, I feel, you know, like every decision comes easily. And it just feels very natural. So having said that, you know, we'll see how this production turns out.
Great. And when are you coming here, and when will the auditions be?
Well, I think we start the auditions, like, right around February 13th,
I believe, or
February 11th, maybe. One of those dates. And we're having a few auditions. We're definitely going to comb all of the schools there and, also outside of the schools. But like I say, a lot of the characters are in their early 20s. That's how old we were when we were living there. So
you're looking for actors who can play early 20s?
Yeah. But, you know, there's a couple of parts that are older, but like six of the characters are early 20s.
Fantastic. Now, the last time we spoke, you were telling me a lot about your raw food diet and supporting hemp products. I just wondered, that's been a few years now since you were here with This Is Our Youth. And have things progressed from your point of view? I mean, is it getting better? Are there more hemp products being produced? Or are the forests being saved at all? I mean, is there progress, or do you feel frustrated by what's going on currently?
I think that's one of the things that hemp has gotten all tied up with its psychoactive cousin, and so people don't realize what hemp is all about is sustainability. And unfortunately, the American economy, and I guess probably even Canada, as progressive as it is similar that way. The economy relies on all these things that are not sustainable. And what I loved about hemp when I discovered it and read The Emperor Wears No Clothes is that it has thousands of different uses. And so for one thing, a great deal of the world's paper was made out of hemp back in the day, years and years ago. Well, we don't need to be, you know, cutting down forests for paper, nor do we need to be using, you know, petroleum and other products. The farmer, I think, can grow all of the things that are now being used through industry. And anyway, that was the concept of hemp. And I do think that, you know, it's being used a lot, especially, you know, because it's pretty healthy. It's being used in food and stuff and clothing.
Yeah, so there is some progress.
Oh, yeah, I think there's a lot of progress. I think it's much more accepted than back when I was, let's see, what would you call that? I guess I was on a PR campaign for it.
Yeah. Now, Ted Danson was in here last year, I think, or 18 months ago, something like that, for his work with the oceans. And now, was it him who first got you interested in sort of environmental issues, or was it before that that you got hooked?
Yeah, I'd say it was Ted because, you know, he used to have American Oceans Campaign, and now it morphed into Oceana, which is really cool. But at the time, one time he couldn't make one of his events, and he asked me to jump in for him. And I had already had kind of an intense interest in what was going on ecologically, but I didn't know much. That particular occasion, they were talking about drift netting. You know, those nets that they use that are just enormous nets that then they just cut loose after the use and they just tangle up everything in the ocean. So I started studying about that, and then I went and did that thing in his stead. And since then I've been, well, at least for a while after that, I was very involved in that kind of thing. And now I feel like I've slacked off a bit, but I'm still very interested in kind of a, I don't know what you would call it, but, well, I give money to things, but I haven't been on the front lines, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. You got busy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I it's not even just getting busy. A bit of it was just getting discouraged, you know, because I felt like, okay, let's say they stopped them from cutting down this forest, well, they just go to another forest. You know what I mean? It's all about, it seems a lot of what is happening ecologically is, you know, there's great organizations, but a lot of it's just putting out fires. You know, they're not really stopping the thing at its root. And so that's why I believe in the concept of sustainability and hemp as a sustainable product, because I think we need to replace all these non-sustainable things that drive our economy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I'm preaching to the choir, I know, and a lot of Canadians are really progressive that way and see that probably more than those of us south of the border.
Yeah. What do you think of things that are going on down there right now? Do you like Obama?
Well, you know, I think I was like a lot of people. I believed that Obama would be our savior, that he was one of us, and that he, you know, he was the real thing, and that he, you know, all you really want in a president, and I tell you, I do think it's a rarity, is someone who cares. And you know, in my lifetime, we had I thought Kennedy cared, I thought Carter cared.
Yeah.
And yet, I don't think you've seen much of presidents caring since then. It's mostly them taking care of their buddies and ultimately themselves. And I don't think that you're going to get a president in there who's not, you know, the system is rigged. You're not going to get a guy who's just going to go in there and change everything. And even if they, even if change is the whole concept of their getting elected, I don't know how much you're going to see change happen.
Yeah, takes a long time.
Well, I think it takes gutting the system that we have.
Yeah, a lot of work there.
Yeah. It is. It's really grown into a real albatross in our country.
Yeah. Can you tell me anything about Friends with Benefits? You've finished shooting that, right?
Oh yeah. It's. I think it's a. You know, it's Mila Kunis and. Who I think is just an amazing actress, and Justin Timberlake, who I think is terrific as well, are the main actors in it. And I play kind of a buddy of Justin's, but I think it's going to be really funny. I have the sense it's going to be really funny, but you never know until you see it. And it's, you know, you kind of get the concept in the title. They try to get together and... you know, have a sexual relationship with without committing to each other.
Yeah, yeah, sounds like fun. Now you joke. That didn't sound good, did it? You jump from comedy to drama. Yeah, you do a lot of different stuff. Is that what keeps you interested as an actor, doing different types of roles?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just finished a movie a little while, well, just before Christmas, called Rampart, which is with the same director, writer, Oren Moverman, who did The Messenger, and who I think is a truly great director. And so that's a dramatic film, and it's very, very intense. For me, it was probably the most intense character I've played. Most challenging in many ways, and to be perfectly honest with you, Gloria, I think I would prefer to just do comedy and just try to make people laugh, but when something comes along like Rampart, I just got to jump into it.
Fantastic. I loved your portrayal of Larry Flint. I thought that was just an awesome role that you did, and I'll also never forget seeing Natural Born Killers. It blew my mind. I just thought it was a fantastic film, but it seemed to rub some people the wrong way. Do you think that film just got misinterpreted, or what happened there? Or people just don't like Oliver Stone? What is it?
Well, I mean, you know, Oliver Stone obviously is a very he tends to stir debate. I do think that movie was a misunderstood romantic comedy, that it's a satire, and that none of the satire got picked up on, and it just became the model of what violence in media can do, which is unfortunate, because I think it was a terrific movie, and I think it was making some good points about violence in the media and trying to comment on that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I thought it was fantastic.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, you're a very discerning audience member.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Do you ever see Ron Shelton and Lolita?
Yeah, I actually saw Lolita a month ago at a yoga class in L.A., and it was incredible because I'm like, I don't know how she does it. Like, she doesn't seem like she's aged even a little bit since I last saw her, and it's bizarre. It's, you know, what's that book where the painting ages? Dorian Gray.
Dorian Gray.
Portrait. I figured, well, Ron must be the portrait. No, because I haven't seen Ron in a little while. So then I texted with him a little bit, but I haven't seen Ron in a little while. But I sure do. I think the world of him.
That's great. Well, Alita's an old friend from here. I haven't seen her in a long time, so I'm glad to hear she's still looking so terrific.
What, is she from Toronto?
Yeah, she is. Well, actually, London, Ontario, which isn't far from here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. And, of course, White Men Can't Jump. That was that a turning point in your career?
Oh, yeah, it really was because, you know, I was on Cheers at the time and I was trying to make a little foray into movies because otherwise, I guess the career's over. But I was trying to, you know, get into movies. I did this movie, Doc Hollywood, with Michael J. Fox. And you know, that did pretty good, but that didn't really necessarily change anything for me. But when Ron cast me in that, in White Men Can't Jump, it really, you know, it was very successful, and it really did help me start, you know, really getting in the movies.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And, okay, it seems to be coming down to a battle between The Social Network and The King's Speech for the Oscars. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I thought both those movies were fantastic. Really, really fantastic. I'm a little bit biased because Jesse Eisenberg's a good friend of mine. But I don't know. I mean, I thought both those movies were great. I don't know. It's funny that it's such a... This business is just lucky to be in it and working and then to think about competing with each other. I don't know. I just can't get into that headspace. I think we're just... we're all just lucky as hell.
Right on. Well, Woody, great speaking with you. I look forward to seeing this new show quite a bit because I really liked the last one that you did here.
Well, thanks, Gloria. You know what? I'm going to give you a free ticket just for having said that.
it's
nice talking to you again, and thank you for you know, being such a great interviewer.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That's a very nice compliment.